darf es etwas mehr Blick sein. Für dich und alle Freunde. Und eine eigene Strandvilla.
Jetzt im Euro-Jackpot. Rund 40 Millionen Euro. Das Leben könnte so Jackpot sein. Mit Euro-Jackpot. In jeder Lotto-Annahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Chance auf den Höchstgewinn 1 zu 140 Millionen. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein. Ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen, sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.
Do you have control over your skeleton? I thought I did. Assumed I, as in my brain, controlled the 206 bone framework to which my skin had been attached, and in which my organs were housed. I think most people share that assumption about themselves. So I'm sure you can imagine my surprise when I found out that my skeleton could operate independently of my command. A fairly horrific revelation, to be honest. I was walking down the sidewalk at about 8 p.m, heading from my apartment to the nearby grocery store for some last-minute shopping, when I saw someone sitting on a park bench, convulsing. They were dressed appropriately for the weather, and, aside from their behaviour, didn't appear to be accustomed to a life on the street, meaning their hair was properly groomed and I could see no holes, stains or tears on their clothes. So I determined they weren't a tweaked out bum and approached cautiously, offering my assistance. The person in question was a woman, middle-aged, wearing a burgundy beanie, dark green and considerably plump winter coat and black leggings. Her head was bowed and her hands rested in her lap. Her attention seemed to be focused on the hands, which wore black gloves. The convulsions originated at the hands and reverberated throughout the rest of her body. She trembled violently and her hands contracted as if a powerful electric current ran through them. Shocked but curious, I asked her what exactly was wrong. And when she did not respond, I nudged her shoulder. This got her attention, and she looked up at me with the most terrified and agonized face I'd ever seen. Her lips tried to form words, but with each attempt she faltered, and I was left to try and glean the cause of her fright and pain from her wide, terror-filled eyes. On a hunch, I reached down and removed the glove that covered her right hand, placed it in the side pocket of my jacket, while assuring her that I'd return it once I got a look at her hand. At worst, I expected a very minor case of frostbite, given the temperatures which had already started to rise from its frigid beginnings of yesterday. But what I found was something far worse, and plainly inexplicable. Her hand had sprouted several fingers from the palm, between the ordinarily present five and front of the wrist. None of the fingers had skin around them, only bone protruded from the flesh of the hand. The bones moved, slowly, and each small motion seemed to bring an intense pain to the woman. Small rivulets of blood ran from the exit wounds of each protrusion, and smears of crimson on the bones gleamed in the illumination of the streetlight overhead. The woman's stare intensified, and though she still could not speak, she practically shouted with that gaze, pleaded with me to help her in some way. But I am no doctor, and nor am I well versed in anything pertaining to medical treatment, certainly not for something like this. So I slipped the glove back on her hand, eliciting a howl of anguish from the woman, and ran off. I was understandably terrified. When I arrived at my apartment, I went to my kitchen, intending to make some coffee to warm myself up. I hadn't gone to the grocery store, and therefore didn't have any coffee, so I settled for brewing some Earl Grey tea, then sat at my humbly bare kitchen table. I was still rattled from the encounter with a woman, and something within myself, some intrinsic, newly awakened insight, warned me to stay away, to resist any lull which would draw me into unconscious rest. I hadn't removed my jacket, which I did after taking a few sips of my tea. In the process of doing so, I felt a strange lump on my side, just near my ribcage. I fully removed the jacket, lifted my shirt, and felt around. And sure enough, a portion of my skin had been elevated to a bulbous lump. I quickly made my way to the bathroom, startled in that vague yet intense way when faced with some unseen bodily ailment, and examined myself in the mirror's reflection. There, plain as day on my side, was a lump, extending from an otherwise level surface to about 3 inches. With each passing second, it lengthened, until I'd watched it grow from 3 inches to about a foot. The skin, by that point, had gave way at the tip, revealing the glistening white of bone. At the base, other lumps had formed and began growing with similar rapidity outward, making my side resemble the spike hide of a porcupine. I, as would anyone in my position, promptly fainted. I was awakened by a bodily shifting, as if shaken awake. When I came to, I was met with quite a horrifying picture. A portion of what resembled a human skeleton had emerged from my side, and was presently trying to pull more of itself from my body. This other collection of bones, or extension of my own, was comprised of half a ribcage fused with collarbones, which were in turn fused with humerus, radius, and ulna, though, in strange, anatomically impossible, and certainly inhuman ways. The whole connection lacked supportive muscle tissue, and yet acted as if it had no need of such things. Blood, of course, had been splattered everywhere, and perhaps to apply some sort of logic to the whole bizarre scene, my mind's first thought was to seal the wound and stop the blood loss. But of course, that brought me right back to the most prominent issue, the thing that had made the wound, and which was presently making it larger as it tried to withdraw further portions of itself from my body. Acting quickly, though probably not sensibly, I swatted away the monstrous appendage and tried to stand. This attempt was met with immediate failure, and I fell back to the bathroom floor. The resultant rattle as the bone collided with the tile was nightmarish, and I hastened my attempts to escape, this time in a crawl. I managed to open the door. Why'd I even close it? And briefly considered slamming it shut while the hellish growth still remained in the room. But, an instant later, decided against it. There was too much risk of harm to myself. Some subconscious impulsion directed me to my hall closet, in which I stored my tools. My body, apparently aware of what must be done, had already retrieved my hammer before my mind caught up with the process of thought. I raised the hammer, still half upright on the floor, trailing that sickly extension, and brought it down on the thing. The first strike accomplished nothing, beyond sending a painful, reverberant wave through my body. The second strike, aimed at the same point as before, was more successful. I shattered the point of impact, which had been a single, thick, trunk-like extension of bone that joined the rest of it to my body. I expected pain, since I was still under the impression that these were mere elongations of myself. But the brutal severance wasn't particularly painful. The severed bundle writhed and flopped about, knocking against the wood paneling of the floor. It was a nightmarish sight, and I held tightly onto the hammer in case I needed to strike it, should it attempt to reattach itself to me. After a while, perhaps 20 seconds, it ceased motion and lay immobile. My side still bled, so I crawled towards the kitchen, all the while eyeing the discarded bones, and retrieved the towel. I made my way back to the closet and used some duct tape to affix the towel tightly to my side, stopping the bleeding. I decided that I required answers and would face the woman to explain what the hell had happened to me. I left the still dead, or at least dormant, collection of discarded bones on the floor and crawled to the kitchen, where I retrieved my jacket. I hoisted myself onto a chair, and after grabbing my kitchen's broom, I broke the handle in half, creating a makeshift cane. I then left the apartment, hobbling into the night. I found the woman, although she by that point wouldn't have been recognizable as such if I hadn't already met her. On the bench sat something which could pass for human from a distance, but upon coming closer would reveal itself to be no more than an empty husk of who it had once been. Skin and clothing both had been torn to make way for the quick and assuredly violent emergence of something which had dwelled beneath those layers. Leading from the discarded wrappings was a crimson trail which entered the nearby woods. I followed it, even though every single instinct told me to flee, to distance myself from the whole scene. I stumbled through those shadowy draped trees for what seemed like an hour, my stride faltering many times, and eventually came to a lesser corpse, where the trees gave each other greater space, and where darkness in turn had retreated somewhat, the moonlight giving greater stay among the wood. Before me, affixed, bored into, and hanging from nearly every tree, were countless bones. The entire grove had been transformed into some horrific ossuary. Tibias, femurs, entire skulls, costal fragments, anything you can imagine of the human skeleton existed among the trees, emerged from the soil, or had been implanted into even the small and large stones of the area. Spinal columns had been wrapped around tree trunks, snaking up and down them hideously, and smears of marrow stained the plant life, blotting out the natural green of the area and illuminated terribly by the moonlight. And, in the center of it all, environed by the unnatural ossification, were two figures. The first, a complete skeleton, and, judging by its general structure, one of a female. It toiled with planting metatarsals into the soil. The other figure, a near-complete human skeleton, though smaller and apparently male, was reaching up towards a tree branch, hammering vertebrae into the limb. I stared, transfixed in terror, as the two skeletons performed their weird, mausolean task. Their actions, the whole scene, was arguably profane, an affront to the sanctity of life itself, a sanctity I hadn't really acknowledged until that moment when I saw those impossibly animate creatures and their monstrous work. I must have exhaled, coughed, or otherwise vocally expressed my mounting repulsion, because they simultaneously turned their vacant skulls towards me, and I peered in those disconcerting, vacant sockets. There was no life there, nothing perceptible with my human senses, but there was an evil impression about them, some demonian aspect which seemed to radiate invisibly from their forms. My repulsion turned to rage, and I found myself advancing, with my walking stick raised to strike. Some ancestral, or perhaps merely primal impulse took command of my body, insisting that I thwart the assuredly evil plot at hand. Man must triumph over evil, intimated my DNA. But I fell, face first into the mud, scratching the skin of my left cheek of my coccyx. I swear I heard a sinister cackling come from the abominable figures. But I did not let it reduce my spirits, and I rose quickly, determined to crush them, just as I crushed the costly extension that had borne itself out of my own body. But by the time I'd risen to stand, the bone men had repositioned, with one in front of me, and behind as well. The flanking bowman delivered a swift and powerful strike to my back, and an instant later, the forefront skeleton delivered an equally devastating strike to my chest, dispersing the wind from my lungs. I fell, defeated, and lost consciousness for the second time that night. I awoke in the morning to the sound of screaming. A woman in winterwear stood over me, wailing like an idiot. A husband or boyfriend held her, but made no attempt to silence his partner. Around me, the grove existed, as I'm sure it had the other night, prior to the infernal one I'd experienced. No bones could be seen anywhere. Upon realizing that I'd laid on the ground, I tried to upright myself, but found that only my right arm responded to the desired action. My left arm did not move, and upon examining it, I found that what had once been a moderately toned arm was now just a bag of skin, with a gaping hole torn into the wrist. I immediately arrived at the conclusion that the bones had been exercised via this tear. Pain, hot, never before imagined pain, arrived at this recognition, and my anguished howling drowned out the pitiful screams of the woman. It wasn't until I arrived at the hospital later that I learned my other limbs had suffered a similar fate as that of my arm. I was a deflated, half-skeletal vestige of a once fit human being. I, of course, could not offer the doctors an explanation as to how I came to be in such a state, and floated the suggestion that someone had mugged me in the park and stolen my bones for whatever reason. According to them, the fact that I was even alive was a miracle, but I didn't want to push their tolerance of the supernatural by providing the truth to the incident. I was thankful to be alive, and my heart burned with a renewed fury for the wicked thieves. I was kept at the hospital for rest and observation for 2 weeks. I have excellent insurance, before eventually being released to my apartment. I was not surprised when I found no trace of the bones which I had severed all those nights ago. I was given a caretaker, also a gift of my gracious medical insurance, who looked after me closely and kindly. She provided me with a microphone and the accompanying software at my request. I don't know the reason behind all this. I don't know why those fiends of bones were transforming the grove into some isolated and ossuary hellscape. But I will not rest until I find out why. I do think that the affliction, natural or otherwise, is infectious. When I put the woman's glove in my pocket, I must have contracted the bone-sprouting disease. Anyway, I'll leave this record in the hopes that others who experience such atrocities may contact me and assist me in stopping whatever black plot is underway.
In Deutschland streamen jeden Tag Millionen von Menschen Musik, Podcasts und Online-Radio. Digital Audio ist mehr als nur ein Hintergrundgeräusch. Es ist ein wichtiger Bestandteil des täglichen Lebens. Und mit seinen präzisen Targeting-Möglichkeiten ist es eines der am schnellsten wachsenden Medien überhaupt. Erfahren Sie auf katzdigital.com, wie Digital Audio Ergebnisse liefert. Das ist katzdigital.com.